In one ear and out the other. Sell your wife, save your brother. It's
all right, you are listening to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby, and I'm with my good friend Aaron Sinek.
Hello.
And we have already begun a conversation about the type of people that could watch baseball on television. I enjoy it. You said it's worse than watching paint dry.
Yes.
Okay,
there's an exception to that rule, actually, which is when the Sox were in the World Series.
Okay.
And I think there's a gene that people have,
yeah,
which is like, they're into sports and they can get behind it. They get behind a team,
yeah,
you know, one way or another, you know, for this reason or that reason. And I was like that when I was little. I used to be a really big Cubs fan. Like the 84
they
Cubs
went to the playoffs in 84
and the 88 Cubs.
And 89. They went to
was
the
it 89? Okay, yeah. Like, you know, Dawson, Sandberg.
That's right. Dawson, you know, was
Grace,
the second era.
Though. Maddox, all that.
Yeah.
You know, I loved all those dudes. But I think at some point I just lost interest, and then coming back to it, I was like, well, I just really don't care. There's nothing here for me to care about. Like, I don't care who wins this.
Okay.
And it's like when I'm watching baseball live, like, I just like watching these people
do, you know, stuff,
do their thing and be good at it is cool.
Okay.
But I actually could get, I don't care who wins. You know,
you don't feel the civic pride or any of that.
Well, that's why I said the exception to the rule was when the Sox won the World Series, and like,
yeah,
even when the Cubs were in the playoffs and all that stuff too, that was kind of like a sort of like, okay, you know what, it's a Chicago thing. This is cool. But even like when the like I went to a Bulls game not,
yeah,
too long ago with coworkers.
Okay.
And it was the most boring 3 hours of my life, just because, like, I mean, sitting there watching, I'm like, I don't care. You know, there's nothing for me to root for. I mean, it's okay, I'm watching these guys perform amazing feats.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'd rather watch like videos of Latvian dudes jumping off buildings and, you know, doing really cool stuff.
So you're not necessarily a team sport guy. You, if you're going to watch feats, you want individuals. So do you like the Olympics?
No, the Olympics, no. They're
you're just not too. A sports
guy. I'm just not a sports guy. Like, even, like, I got a lot of friends that are into martial arts.
Yeah.
And I've gone to watch them fight a million and one times, and the only time I've ever been interested, because when you go to, like, one of these fights,
uh-huh,
especially if it's not something spectacle-y like UFC or whatever,
uh-huh,
it's just like, you know, yeah, you know, this giant martial arts tournament that's a qualifier or whatever, you're there for like 9 hours.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's like shooting, it's like being in a video shoot or a movie shoot.
Okay.
Where you go and your friend is going to be up there, and so you have to part, you know, you're participating in one thing, but really most of it is just waiting and waiting and waiting, and you're watching fight after fight after fight of dudes doing the same stuff over and over again. And I don't understand it because I don't follow the, you know, I don't know how all the rules and mechanics work.
Yeah.
I know how some of them do, but I hang out with all these guys who are really into it because they fight or they're really into it. So like, they're like, oh yeah, you put them in an arm bar and then a leg lock and then a blah, blah, blah. And like, yeah, that was cool. But like but when your friend is up there, then
yeah,
you're like, and you see it, you're like, oh cool. You know, yeah, go my friend, you know, and you're really happy about
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
aside from that, like I have left so many of those for like hours and hours at a time, because, you know, if you're fighting in them, you have to get there really early,
yeah,
to weigh in and do all this stuff, and then after that you're just like, okay, it's 7 a.m. now what?
Oh man,
let's find breakfast.
These are your friends from the South Side, correct?
Yes.
And
well,
you are I'm okay.
Most of them. They're either from, most of them are from the South Side or Northwest Indiana.
Okay, which is relatively like the South.
It's
Side,
basically so the South. It the South Side kind of ate it.
And I brought that up because you're from that area.
Mm-hmm.
You're from a suburb or the...
I am from a suburb.
What suburb are you from?
Far south suburb called Tinley Park.
Tinley Park, which is where most people know an awful, awful music venue.
Yes, there's the...
The New World...
Well,
what's the name of it?
Now it is the First Midwest Bank Amphitheater.
Which is different than the thing on the lake. What's that?
On the lake?
The one that was on Waverly Park, but that's called something else.
Waverly Park.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not thinking of the wrong thing. Mixfield, Mixfield has become a park, but now it's a different name as well.
Yeah, that's something else. And
but it sounds like First Midwest Bank.
It's definitely like some kind of national bank.
Yes.
Something. A bank owns it. I know that.
Okay.
I've biked through it. I've never been to a show there.
Yeah.
Have you?
No, I haven't. It's right by Soldier Field. That's the only.
Yeah, I mean, like
I biked
through
by
there.
It.
Oh.
You can bike through the actual park.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah, you can actually
do that.
I've never been to Soldier Field up
yeah,
until...
Really?
Yeah. Well, and I think this is probably also why I don't have the sports genius, because
yeah,
my dad was never into sports.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
You know, he... my dad's a mechanic. He likes fixing things, and like he's a hobbyist.
You would say a lot of blue collar guys like sports.
Yeah. Oh no. I mean, hey. It was always a bitch at family events because like. You know, you go to Thanksgiving or you go to Christmas or whatever.
Yeah,
and
you watch the game.
You watch the game, and then you have like me and my dad who are like, we tell the same jokes every year about like who's playing. I don't know. Ha ha ha. so we end up actually talking to. You know, it's weird because family events get segregated from, you know, a lot of times by gender.
Okay. Yeah.
For a while, and so like I end up hanging out with most of my female relatives. Before the dude relatives, because they're all watching sports, and I don't care.
That's probably why you have a girlfriend.
Could be.
That probably helps.
Could be.
You grew up in Tinley Park.
Yes, I grew up in Tinley Park. I lived in the same house in Tinley Park my whole life. My parents are from the South Side. They lived in Burbank-ish, and I know my mom grew up near 63rd and
right by Midway then.
Yeah, near Midway. And then, when my dad grew up, somewhere similar around there, too.
Okay.
When they got married in the mid-70s, they moved to Tinley Park, which back then was, the place they moved to. When I was a kid, there was nothing.
Yeah,
there was nothing. Well, there was nothing
right?
south of me. We were the last block before, and there was, a giant prairie and a field, and then it was just random farms.
That's cool to grow up in.
Well, it was kind of neat because, the thing is, it was not – the interesting thing about it was that, you had this giant farm – or not farm, but you had this giant prairie, right? And then further south of that, you had a couple of farms. But then if you went a little bit further south and west, you ran into the town of Mattson.
Okay.
And it was actually a place, you
okay.
know?
So there was, this no man's land for
Yeah, so there's, this little kind of demilitarized zone, which was interesting. But, I remember when they started building all the subdivisions near – there because I used to play in that construct what was the prairie that I played in. We're actually we used to dump dirt, not trash, but when my dad would be digging up the yard or doing this or that or doing some kind of random construction, we would take wheelbarrows full of dirt and wheel them two blocks down to the prairie and just dump them because it's just dirt, so you're not really littering. Although I think he probably used to dump old Mortorell in there, too.
Yeah, whatever.
But anyway, so, but when they started building that subdivision, I used to play in that construction site.
That's cool.
Which was cool. I remember sliding down the dirt mound, all that stuff. But, there was nothing out there. I mean, even, Orland Park, which is now, there is no actually commercially available land anymore.
Really?
You cannot... The last piece of property that's zoned for commercial use, retail, was sold, I think, 4 or 5 years ago now, and it's a Lowe's now.
Okay.
But it was big news because it was the last big plot of land. It was the one guy who had a farm out there who just held out for as long as he could to make the most money.
And he did. Good for him.
And he did. Yeah. Well, and it's all condos and, all that stuff. And it's one big weird
kind
of...
it's condos?
Okay, not condos, but... there are actually a lot of condos out there. Not in the same way that you have them down here in the city. Where
here is Westtown, for those of you that don't know. It's northwest of the Loop. It's 2 L stops away from the Loop.
Yeah.
So it's about a mile.
Well, when I say here, I mean the city at large.
Yeah. Well, no, that's not fair either, because condos in on the end of the Blue Line versus condos in Wicker Park are totally different.
True. But I guess these are more townhouses.
Yeah,
you would
say
where you have 2 or 3 people that live, in the same little building.
Got it.
But it's more, it looks like a house.
Okay.
Just a really big house.
Okay.
So you have a lot of that, and then you have some of these little condominium complexes where you want to call it, no one wants to call it an apartment out there.
Really?
Because, well, it's the suburbs. No one wants to live in an apartment.
Well, that's the thing. If you're living in the suburbs, why would you want to call it a condo? Why would you want...
Condo sounds classier than apartment.
Really?
Yeah. Trust me.
I understand the difference between owning and buying. That makes sense. It's better to own than to rent.
For some people.
Well, for you and I, we're in apartments and we're not making money.
Right.
We're losing money.
I think it's actually... bad if you own anything now, just because
I
know a lot of I have a lot of friends that own houses, and
their property taxes are just killing them.
Their property taxes are killing them, plus their houses aren't worth. They're the type of people who I've got one friend who bought a house and he knows he's going to live there for 10 years.
Well, that's cool, man, right?
So he's good. Yeah, no, he's good.
Okay.
But I got a lot of other friends who bought a house and the idea was to buy a house, own it for a year or two, and sell it on a profit.
Oh, okay.
With the housing crisis and the mortgage crisis and all that, it's just not happening.
Yeah.
You know, and some of these kids too are people who probably shouldn't have gotten loans. Like, I mean, their credit's better than mine, yes.
Don't you wish that you got one of those loans though?
God, no.
No, really. Everyone. Okay. If the bailout happens like it's supposed to happen, right?
Okay.
And the people that got loans that shouldn't have gotten loans are kind of forgiven, right? In theory. They're coming out ahead.
Ish.
And I feel like I should have got in on that.
But at the same time, their credit rating is still fucked.
Well, yeah.
And in the meantime...
But their credit rating is the exact same before they got the house. You see what I mean?
Well, yeah, but at the same time, too, they're also still... I mean, they still have been, over the years, barely scraping by, like trying to pay for a mortgage they can't afford. And yeah. In some cases, and some people have already lost their houses.
Yeah.
And they're completely fucked.
And then they're in the same place they were before they owned the house, which is, see what I mean?
Well, no, in some cases, it's not even that they're in an apartment anymore. They're back home with mom and dad.
Yeah.
You know, or, I mean, you know, or worse, you know, and so it's one of those things where I'm like, you know what? Because, I mean, the way I look at it now is if I had a house.
Yeah.
The collection agencies that are.
They know where to find you.
Well, they know where to find me now, at least kind of.
Yeah.
But the collection agencies that are really after me would be able to say, you know, put a lien on my house or whatever, like, you know, have the bank foreclose on it, you know, whereas they can't tell my landlord to kick me out. The most they can do would be to attempt to repossess my car. However, because I bought it used and all sorts of other things, I can't even get you can't even repo that.
Really?
I mean, you can try, but it's not as trackable, say, as like if I went to a dealership purchased, because this was all under the table kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's really kind of off the books, whereas like, you know, if you went to a used car dealership and bought it from the used car dealership and then you're making payments on it and stuff like that, at that point, they can come after you much, much easier because you have this trackable kind of string of finances, whereas this was paid up front outright in cash in full between various owners.
Okay.
So there's no real records of anything.
I see your point.
There's a title exchange, but so what?
Yeah.
You know, and in fact, I think there's some... Well, I'm not going to get into it because
I don't want to get you in trouble. Myself legally.
But no, so I mean, there's less to, you know, there's less to worry about in that way. What are they going to do? They're going to break into my apartment and take my records? Okay.
They might. You have some valuable 7 inches.
Not so much anymore. I had to sell a lot. Yeah,
well, the reason I brought up the 7 inches is because you are into punk rock and roll.
Yes.
But you are no longer the key demographic for being into punk rock and roll. Let's say the key demographic is, say, up to 22.
I think it depends. And I think the key demographic thing is an interesting thing because I think it depends on which subset of punk, in quotes.
Okay.
You say is the demographic of, because, you know, like, you have, you know, if I don't actually see a lot of like the newer cool stuff that people are into, so like
who are some of the acts that you still enjoy?
I still love, all right, punk wise, I mean, Dillinger Fort.
Okay.
Local bands like The Arrivals, which my radio show is named after.
Well, The Arrivals have been here a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up with those dudes.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I've been hanging out with those guys since I was like 15.
Yeah.
And I'm close to 30.
And they're still playing.
They're still playing, yeah. You know, so you've got that, like, Propagandhi, Bad Religion, you know.
Okay. When I went to a Bad Religion show, the crowd was split between, like, 45-year-olds and 15-year-olds.
Yeah.
It was everyone.
Right. And so, like, I think that's why that's not necessary. You can... there's not necessarily a key demographic for Bad Religion.
Okay, what about Dillinger Four?
Same thing with Dillinger Four, actually. You see a lot of like old dudes there.
Well,
like,
that's because, they're an alcoholic band, though.
Well, it's true.
I mean, they're kind of known for that, and they sing about that. It's kind of like NoFX or something, for those that don't know Dillinger Four. But if you knew Dillinger Four, you know NoFX. Anyways,
most likely.
Go ahead.
But beyond that, they're also another one of those bands that have been, I mean, they've been together for 15 some odd years. So you're talking about a solid, you know, you're talking about, it's kind of like, and this is a weird analogy, it's kind of like the Harry Potter books.
Okay.
Where, you know, you have kids that, when those books came out, they were children's books. Because their demographic were kids who were like 8 or 9. Well, 10 years later.
Okay.
15 years later, those kids are now 18. They're 20. They're, you know, older, some of them. I mean, some kids who got into those books were already 15.
Yeah.
Or even 13. And now they're, you know, in their mid-20s, you know, going on later. So it's just one of those things where it travels with. Whereas like,
so it's not weird.
It's not weird, no. Whereas, like, the, you know, newer stuff like and not, I can't even say Fall Out Boy is newer.
Yeah.
Because they've been a band for like 5-6 years, I think.
Yeah, they have.
At this point. Yeah. I mean, and all those dudes
used to be in hardcore bands and used to be in hardcore, see those bands.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember seeing Fall Out Boy. You know, Fall Out Boy's like first show as Fall Out Boy, yeah. You know. But that's where the younger kids are. Like, My Chemical Romance?
But
like,
come on,
is
like,
that punk?
But once again, even like when you were that age, their key demo is like 15, 16, 17, right?
Yeah.
When you were that age, you still weren't listening to the popular bands.
That's true. No, I mean.
So it doesn't matter. I'm just. There's a subset of bands now. Like, do you think that you just don't know about?
Yeah, no, I think there's an entire subset of bands that you could find on, like, you know, I don't want to say MTV, but whatever it is, kids.
Yeah,
do these,
MySpace. Let's just say MySpace.
Let's say MySpace, where, like, there's an entire subset of bands that kids are super, super into that mm-hmm. you would, I guess, lump into the all-purpose, you know, generic punk category mm-hmm. that I have no idea about any of it.
Yeah.
And it's just because it's not something I. You know, every now and again, I'll get something passed along to me, and I'll go, wow, this is really good. But it turns out that, like, those guys are probably in their, you know, mid-20s.
Oh,
or,
really?
Or, no, you know what? Even there are a handful of bands with kids that are younger that I've heard that I've gone, wow, this is actually really good. But
yeah.
It's in the same vein as, like, you know, older style, you know, mid-90s punk or early 80s punk
yeah.
or, like, you know, 70s, you know, early 80s hardcore, late 70s punk, which is, like, kind of where I'm gravitating towards because, like, I mean, the first thing that I listened to that was, well, I like to look at Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction as a punk record.
I hate that record.
But it's more of a punk album than it is a metal album.
No, it's not. No, it's not. I'm sorry.
Why?
Solos.
Yeah, but you know what?
Subject matter, you can go either way, but it's the solos and the production.
Okay, I'll give you the production, but the solos.
Productions, there's two lead guitarists.
Yeah, but I mean. Like, you look at, like, a lot of older bands. Like, I guess not so much punk, but hardcore.
Okay.
Like, the Cro-Mags or Warzone or anybody like that who were around well before them. Those dudes in the mid-80s, they all had solos. I mean, hell, Agnostic Front had solos, which is funny because they weren't very good.
Okay, but Izzy and Slash were amazing.
Right, they were all really good players.
Yeah.
But at that point, I think, too, a lot of people were getting better. The interesting thing about that whole kind of era of metal
uh-huh.
was that, like, and it's more on the Metallica end of things, was, like, back in the, you know, the days of Kill 'Em All when I was, like, 3 years old and didn't, you know. Sorry.
It's fine.
Because when you, you know, I was the type of kid who, like, you know, I watched all those, like, old videos of, like, you know, Metallica shows in, like, in 82.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, Megadeth shows in 84 and all that kind of stuff. You see a bunch of, like, dudes who, like, have mohawks and, like, you know, punk shirts and whatnot, and, like, you know, bands like Anthrax, like, you know, were playing with punk bands at the time.
Yeah.
So it was one of those things where, like, I guess thrash and punk kind of went together.
I could see that.
You know,
somewhat.
And, like, that's kind of what I mean, I grew up listening to that, you know, when I was in, like, fourth grade and fifth grade and junior
yeah.
high and stuff. And then when I got to high school, I met this dude who's been a long, long time friend ever since. And he, like, we started hanging out because a mutual, like, a kid I went to grade school with. Was like, oh, dude, I'm so glad you're in this class. Hey, listen, you got to meet this kid. I know you would like each other. And it was like, I went to Catholic school.
Yeah.
So it was, but it was on a jeans day.
Oh,
which,
nice.
Which we had, you know, Friday, every now and again, like
yeah.
once a month.
I went to Catholic
jeans.
School
okay,
as
yeah,
well.
So you get, you
know, we had to pay the dollar to wear them.
Oh, they instituted that my junior year.
Yeah.
They didn't do it for the first
We had to, like,
years.
Donate to the school or something
yeah.
to wear our jeans one day.
We had to do that every now, like, after a certain point.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, I remember me, you know, meaning my friend Andy, who had, you know, he's like, oh, you know, you'd love him because, like, I think I was wearing, like, a Guns N' Roses t-shirt and he was wearing a Black Sabbath shirt.
Yeah.
And so immediately you're like, oh my God, this is awesome, you know. But he was really, really into punk. And so he's like, listen, no, you're going to like this. I'm going to make you a tape, you know. And so he made me a tape and I was Fear, The Misfits, The Clash, very early Green Day, like, because this was probably 94.
So, well,
yeah,
think
this
he was out in 94. Or 93.
It might have been 93, but this was stuff off the Kerplunk album.
Nice.
Because he didn't even have Dookie. Like, he just had, like...
I'm an early Green Day
fan. Yeah, I'm an early Green Day fan, dude. I have the 1001 Slap... Or, you know,
yeah.
Slappy Hours or whatever. But there was that, and then there was, like... God, what the hell else was on there? I don't even really remember. But it was, like, you know, like, that Black Flag. Like, that kind of,
yeah.
like, you know, your Circle Jerks. You know, you're kind of, like, really...
Like the first wave of the West Coast punk.
First
stuff.
Wave of West Coast punk with a little bit of, like, East Coast stuff sprinkled in there.
Okay.
You know? And so that's what got me into it, and that's kind of where I've always been. Even though, like, I mean, I still have a giant collection of albums from Fat Records, which I love.
Yeah, they're good.
Metronome rock can be fun. and everything else, you know. But I think that there's an entire genre now that I literally don't understand. And I think the weirdest experience, like, that really hit me when I figured out, like, wow, there's an entire generation of kids that are into the same kind of subculture I am, but that are completely alien to me, was I interviewed Bleeding Through, which is kind of a weird... I don't know if you know who they are.
I don't. I'm sorry.
Some people do, some people don't, but it's like they were kind of a hardcore band, but they were more like way more metal, and they were like makeup and stuff and eyeliner and things. So I was interviewing them for the zine I did, and I went to the show. You know, I got in or whatever. Kate and I went, and it was like they were opening for AFI.
Okay.
And this was after, because I mean, I remember like...
Wait, what year is this?
This was probably 02, 03, maybe 04.
So AFI is already on a major label at this point.
Yeah, no, the AFI was already, they had blown the fuck up already.
Yeah.
I mean, they were big shit.
So where was this? Like at the Congress, House of Blues?
Aragon?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was
for those of you who don't know, Aragon is probably the largest theater without seats in Chicago.
Yeah,
if you're going to see a show.
Yeah,
like,
if you're going to see a show, it's...
Like, the Pumpkins played there in 2000.
Weezer has played there a million times.
Yeah. Like, Deftones. Whenever Deftones play Chicago, they come through the Aragon.
God, I remember seeing that band on their first tour as well.
Oh, God.
You know? But, like, you know, so this was at the Aragon. You know, this was sold out. It was two nights, and it was a sold-out show. You know, and I got in plus one, you know, to interview Bleeding Through. It was one of those kind of sold-out shows where, like, you know, I had a press pass, but that doesn't get me backstage.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff.
Completely.
And so, you know, we're waiting in line there, and there's just, like, nothing but, like, kids who are, like, 13. And, you know, at that time, I'm, like, you know, in my mid-20s looking around going, okay. And the most interesting thing about it, aside from the fact that when I was interviewing these dudes, at some point, their age came up, and I had expected that they were my age or older, but they were actually younger than me.
Oh, man.
And, like, two of them are taller than me, so I, like, expected them to be older for some reason.
Oh, that's gotta be rough.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, Jesus, you're only 21? You know? but at the same time, like, we watched most of the show from the balcony.
Okay.
And the other, it was almost full, and it was just full of people's parents. It was just like moms and dads, mostly moms actually, just hanging out.
Oh,
you know,
man.
And I had thought, I was like, you know, I should scrap this interview and just interview these moms. Yeah. And be like, so how do you feel about being here? You know, because all of them look really, really bored. A couple of them really, really concerned, you know, about their kids on the floor, you know. And it was just so weird because I'm like, God almighty, like, what are these kids? Because I really thought about it during AFI set because, you know, they played absolutely nothing. Because, I mean, I saw them in, like, 96 when they were a skate punk band.
Yeah. They changed quite a bit. Well, didn't they go through, like, a guitarist and album or something like that?
They might
for
have.
A while?
I mean, but it was one of those things where I was like, yeah, you know, I don't... like, all of this is completely foreign to me. And then you have, like, bands like, you know, My Chemical Romance and all that, which people do, I guess, consider punk.
Yeah.
But... Or, and there are other, you know, there are a million Blink-182s out there. That was a fad for a while.
I like that you referenced a band who is now, like, kids won't even remember or know.
What, My Chemical...
No, Blink-182.
Oh, really?
Think about it.
They've broken up
like 4 years ago now.
Yeah, but everybody knows Travis Barker because he got into a plane accident.
But they don't know necessarily why they know him. They know him from his reality show.
Oh, he had a reality show,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah, see, again, this comes from, like, not, you know, you think you pay attention to, like, media, but really, like, the older you get,
yeah,
you are paying attention to media, but you're paying attention to a different kind of media.
You're not. Well, okay, what's the newest band you listen to? Or, I mean, okay. What's the what's a current band you listen to?
Like, that just started out, or
either,
like,
just started out or you just found out about. Or an album that came out recently. That isn't local.
That isn't Dillinger 4.
That isn't Dillinger 4.
Just
exactly.
Came out.
No, it's that isn't Dillinger 4.
There are a handful of
name,
like,
one.
Crap. Well, no, because those are all local shit.
No, okay, name the local ones.
It
can't be the Rivals either.
No. Like, the Repos, or, you know, which is ex Meshuggahs and other stuff.
Okay, but that's you. That's Meshuggah, though.
You know, no, it's not them. It's the dudes. Well, it's their new band.
Okay,
God, who? I'm trying to actually, like, because I've seen a lot of these bands, and for some reason I can't remember their names, and I feel really, really bad because, like, I'm friends with Weekend Nachos, you know, like, they're...
I don't know Weekend Nachos.
They're a hardcore band from Chicago. I mean, you go to chicagohardcore.net, you look at the message board, and you look at, like, the threads kids are talking about, yeah, like, the top most recent threads, and just look for the band's name, like, Harm's Way or Thought Crusade or, like, any of these, you know... bands like that, like, I've like, those are probably the most recent things that I've gotten. Alkaline Trio.
No, that doesn't count.
That doesn't count.
No, it doesn't count. Are you being sarcastic too?
No, I'm being dead serious. Like,
you like the new Alkaline Trio record?
I have heard three songs from it.
It doesn't mean that is not the
kind. I like three songs.
You like three songs from it. You've heard three songs from it, but you've known that band for over like 15 years now.
It's true. I have. What about?
Wait, that's wrong. They're not 15 years. They're like 10 years.
Yeah, but well,
either way, you've known them for quite a long time.
If you count Slapstick.
No, it's completely different.
All right. What about Against Me?
No, Against Me. You've known them for like 10 years.
God, I'm an old son of a...
No, Against Me, the guys in Against Me are older than you. Name a band whose members are younger than you that you like.
I'm sure they're out there. I just can't remember. Like, I'll remember them at some point.
5 years ago, would you have been able to answer that question without thinking?
Yeah.
Do you care anymore?
No.
Is that good or bad?
That's good.
Why?
Actually, because you just... I mean...
What do you care about then? Because before, you obviously cared about punk rock. That's fine.
Oh, I mean, don't get me wrong. I still care
about
punk
rock. But it's not. You're not thinking about it. You're not pursuing it as much because you've grown up in a way.
Well, I think it's one of those things where, like, at some point, you lose. Because, like, everybody gets, you know, starry-eyed in front of XYZ people.
Mm-hmm.
Be it, you know, movie stars or rock stars or punk rock all-stars or whatever. And even when you don't, even when you're not that type of person because, like, you just hang out so much that you know these people. Like, even I got, like... Like, I've never stuttered in front of somebody's band. Like, Toby from H2O, I met him a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And it was actually right after I had finished one of my tattoos, which was, it's not exactly, but it was inspired by the cover of Thicker Than Water. It's like, it's just a Sacred Heart, and it was a cover-up of a crappy heart tattoo that I had, which was very, very...
Okay.
Very bad. And so, but, like, it was modeled after that cover. And so, like, I met him outside the Metro and was like, hey, dude, you know, I really like you guys, blah, blah, blah. And this was right when that record came out.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, you know, I'm sure you get this all the time, but, you know, check this out. You know, and I showed him the tattoo and he thought it was cool. But even in that, I was, like, calm and collected and, like, I was just, like, I was talking to somebody else. And I think that's an ethos that comes from, like, being in bands and being, like, you know, playing with bigger bands, mm-hmm, if you get your shot, or like just hanging out. Like, I mean, I guess I was really stoked when I got to meet Lee Ving of Fear.
Okay, why?
Because he's Lee Ving and it's Fear, and Fear was one of the first, was one of those bands on that mixtape my buddy made.
Yeah,
so I'd been,
okay,
you know, and I was super, super stoked about it. But again, it was one of those things where I wasn't like shaking or something. Whereas like my old guitar player from my old band, when we played the Fireside once, Brendan Kelly from Slapstick and the Lawrence Arms. Is he Lawrence Arms or Broadway's? Or
not a clue.
He's in one of those bands. Lawrence Arms or Broadway's, I don't know which. But he was there. And this was before them. This was back when he was just famous for being in Slapstick.
Okay.
You know, he's for people
so this
who
is like 96.
Yeah, it was like 96 or 97. Okay. He was, you know, but you're talking about a local legend.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, my guitar player talked to him first because he came up to us after the show. And the most that he could muster was, dude, I really like your music, and like shook his hand. Whereas like the dude talked to me for a little while, and I know what kind of a smarmy asshole he was. I mean, he might not be now, and so if you're cool now, that's cool. Like, I don't want to start any kind of beef.
But
like,
this is
12 years ago. I was probably 18.
Yeah.
You know, and like a year prior to that, a friend of mine had met him, and he was like a total jerk to my friend. So I was like, fuck this guy. He's been a jerk to my friend. And so I was just talking to him, but I was nice to him. Like, he was like, yeah, I liked you guys. I was like, oh, thanks, man.
Yeah.
And then he was like, hey, listen, the lyrics. Were you serious or was that sarcasm? Because I wrote a lot of songs that were like, you know, satire on, you know, America and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, satire, dude. And he's like, oh, good, I still like you. And then he walked away, and that was kind of it. So it was this really funny interaction where I'm like, you know, my good friend is like, you know, starstruck, and yet I'm like, meh, whatever. The one time that I have been starstruck was when I got to meet Noam Chomsky. Where I literally, like, I went to see his lecture, in Bloomington at ISU, and you know, sat there for 3 hours, and then afterwards he had a Q&A for like 45 minutes.
Okay.
After his Q&A, everybody left, but he's still, but like a core crowd of people like crowded around him. A couple people wanted him to sign books.
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't afford to buy a book, so I was just like, I'm just gonna hang out and keep hanging out, you know. And at some point, people started asking him questions, so he kind of just sat down on the stage, like right at the corner of it, with like maybe 20 people around him, and I kind of pushed my way through people. I used all those like, you know, skills that I have from going to all sorts of shows to like edge my way through all these this crowd of people.
Yeah.
And I perched myself, squatted next to him for another 45 minutes. So this is like 4 hours, right? And I recorded the entire conversation. And I sat next to him the entire time. I'm sitting next to him, I'm like, holy fuck, I'm sitting next to Noam Chomsky, you know, this man, you know. And that then when I shook his hand afterwards, I was like, oh, this is amazing. And then when I emailed Anthony, his kind of like pseudo handler manager, okay, or whatever, I was like, hey, listen, you know, I've got this, you know, recording of this after conversation and blah 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 blah, kind of want to use it for like a zine I'm doing, or you know, podcasts weren't around back then, so yeah, I couldn't. But like, well, at least I didn't know what a podcast was then. And he emailed me back. He's like, well, you know, it sounds like a cool idea, but why don't you ask Noam? And he gives me Noam's email address and like told him, like,
yeah,
you know. And so like, and I got I emailed, but you know, I never ended up being able to use it for anything for a couple of reasons that made perfect sense to me.
Okay.
But at the same time, I'm like sitting there going, holy fuck, I'm emailing Noam Chomsky and he's writing back to me. This is amazing, you know. That's really the only time. And I think the difference now is that like everything is such, like even in punk rock, like modern punk rock is such a production and a spectacle where you're like, you know, because everybody's got videos and everybody's got like, you know, DVDs, and like everybody has hoodies that sell for $40 and CDs that have like multi-million dollar production quality. And you're like, okay.
But.
And so you have kids that get starstruck, and it's like, well, this is weird because like it used to be something where like, you know, you had a pretty good chance of like just hanging out with some dudes.
But there's pretty. But I think there's more transparency now than before, though, because of things like MySpace and blogs. So there's no more mystique with everything. People know about the production. People know the behind the scenes of it more.
I think people know the behind the scenes about it more, but at the same time, I still think a lot of like, and this might be like more pop music than anything else. Like, I think there's still a mystique around it because like, why the hell does Mike Skinner from the Streets' blog win awards? Like, his MySpace blog has won awards, and the dude writes like a paragraph.
I know what you're talking about. I've never read it.
Like, I actually really like the Streets.
Yeah.
Like, and some of his, there was one blog he wrote that was three paragraphs long where he apologized for how the length of it. And I'm like, no, this is actually interesting. You know, the rest of the time I'm like, you're just like, oh yeah, I was at the show. I performed. Then I got drunk. My head is spinning. I'm writing a new song, you know, and people are like, yeah, this is so cool. I feel like I'm really connecting. I'm like, I highly doubt it. Either he's writing it while he's like, you know, smoking a cigarette in the morning really quick, or it's just like one of his handlers that are taking care of it. Because I think that's the other thing with like the MySpace phenomenon is that like if you think, you know, Johnny Popstar cool guy is actually writing it, it's probably, or managing the website, it's probably just an intern.
I think it's pretty obvious when they are writing it. For example, Courtney Love's.
I've never read hers.
Courtney Love's blog is amazing.
Really?
Her MySpace, it's, yeah, there are definitely no handlers attached to that.
Interesting. I'll
have
to check
that
out.
Yeah, that is nothing. There probably should be a proofreader on that. There are a lot of grammar errors. She spelled with recently W-I-H-T. See? So,
oh, no, that's just a typo, though, when you really think about it.
It's completely a typo, but when half the sentence is spelled like that and you can't spell with correctly.
Unless, is it cool now for kids to like,
I don't think
misspell
with
things?
Is one of the words.
Well, no, because remember that trend where like people like they capitalized every other letter in a word?
Oh, yeah.
Like that was cool? Like, is misspelling cool now in writing?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's maybe all phonetically, but even phonetically, it's not
correct.
W-I-F.
Well.
Could pass. The point being is some people are writing it.
Sure.
But once again, you're going for the big bands. And when you were into it in, say, 97, you weren't going for the big bands.
No, I mean, there were big bands I was going for, but at the same time, like, I guess it's one of those things.
Because everyone you've talked about was like, relatively small.
From back in the day or from now?
Both.
Relatively small.
Like the bands you like.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't think so much.
That's like Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't talk so much about the bigger bands. But then again, I don't know what's big now. And I guess this is the whole point. I don't know what's big and what's not.
You would know because you couldn't see them. You would know if your favorite band was playing an arena versus the Bottom Lounge. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
So,
I think it's just getting old is weird.
Because
you're like, yeah, there's a disconnect.
Yeah.
And you like to believe that disconnect doesn't exist. And like, it's exactly like the Hullabalooza episode of The Simpsons where Grandpa says, you know, I used to be with it, and then what it was changed, and now what I'm with isn't it, and now what's it is weird and scary to me.
I think you nailed it.
Yeah. Well, or Matt Groening nailed it, and I just stole it well.
I'm going to end this episode quite soon. We've only talked about two of the five things I wrote down, and I usually write down 10 things.
Well, so you can edit things out, right?
No, I'm not editing anything out. Right. I will adjust sound quality, but I don't want to edit any of this out. I think it's very interesting.
Okay,
so you need to pick a number 1 to 260, because I'm going to ask you a question from the Kids Book of Question by Gregory Stock, PhD. So, 1 to 260.
179.
You know what's good about this? Everyone that's done this so far hasn't picked 1 or 260. They're all been quite different, which is very good.
That's lame. Yeah. 1 or 260 is lame. You just got to pull a number out of your head.
I think that was very good. Okay, question 179. Would you rather your family loved one another and always showed how they felt, sometimes fighting and yelling, sometimes hugging and kissing, or would you prefer they loved one another and hid their feelings whenever they were upset or angry?
As somebody who... I guess I don't know what it would be like if people, like, hid their stuff. Like, I mean, if somebody, like, you know, my immediate family, you know, my parents and, you know, brother, always, you know, I guess my mom, you know, would show stuff less.
Yeah.
You know, she would always try to maintain the peace and be happy. But, like, you know, the rest of us were always out there in the open. And, like, now that I'm older, you know, my mom will open up about, you know, stuff she's upset about or sad about. So I can't picture it any other way than, like, being completely open. Same thing with my friends, actually. Like, you know, I can't picture, I mean, if somebody's pissed, they're going to yell at you, or they're going to scream at you, or they're going to cry, or they're going to punch you in the face or whatever. I don't think I could live any other way.
So you're going to go with the angry, yelling, and happy and embracing versus the calm and boring.
Yeah,
I shouldn't have said boring. I mean, calm.
Well, yeah, no, calm and boring. I mean, yeah, no, I would rather people just show, I mean, when you bottle up all that emotion, it just explodes at some point, and worse things happen.
That's right.
That's how Columbine happens.
And that's what this is all really about. It's just going to be one long examination about why Columbine happened. Aaron, thank you so much for coming by.
I obviously will have
you on again, because I got a lot to talk about.
What else is on that list?
Zines.
All right, zines, yeah, I do zines.
Shoes.
I do shoes. I don't do shoes. I have crappy shoes.
We talk about the south side, but you refuse to live on the north side.
It's true. I do refuse to move north of Madison Avenue.
And going to school at Columbia College.
Yeah.
And it's only five topics.
I know.
And we only hit two.
I'm long-winded.
And we only hit like one and a half.
I'm really long-winded.
Isn't that good? This is the easiest interview I've ever done.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well,
thanks.
For this, it's definitely the easiest I've ever done. I'm going to close the show with Daniel Knox, who is the furthest thing from punk rock. Do you know Daniel Knox? I think you've seen him when you've seen my band.
I've seen him when I've seen your band, and I vaguely know of who he is through you.
I love him. I love him so much.
If you were to put on a Daniel Knox song right now,
I
would, and not tell me what it is, I probably wouldn't recognize it.
Oh, I agree completely.
Is it acoustic?
No, it's not acoustic. It's a man on a piano.
Oh, piano, right.
Yep.
Okay.
See? Exactly. He is playing the first weekend of December at the Old Town School of Folk Music with Kirsten Hirsch from the band Throwing Muses. And if you are in London, he is playing there the next week at a Christmas show with Patrick Wolf and Jarvis Cocker of Pulp and all those wonderful people. So here's Daniel Knox.
In one ear and out the other, sell your wife, save your brother. It's no one's fault, the ship just sunk. Wet dreams, you wake up drunk. My heart is in my wallet. Anything, anything you want to call it. Weighs 10 pounds and doesn't move. it loves money, but it doesn't love you. All my cards are on the table, no longer young and able. I call your bluff, tell it twice. Everybody, everybody has their price. My heart is in my wallet. Anything, anything you wanna call it, it hurts like hell, but I see it through. I love money, but I never loved you. Setting fire to all the churches, with each and every single purchase, I sign my name and place my bet to keep you bastards in my debt. My heart is in my wallet. Anything, anything you wanna call it, it weighs 10 pounds and doesn't move. It loves money, but it doesn't love.